Thank you so much. Good afternoon. I'd like to begin by thanking the session organizer and moderator and my fellow presenters, and thank you all for being here. My name is Erin Peacock. I'm a doctoral student at Tulane School of Public Health. Today I'll be presenting a piece of my dissertation research that examines how women in one location in Western Kenya respond to depression. I have no relationships to disclose. So I think we all have a sense of how dire the global mental health situation is, but let's consider the data, and I believe this is the same data that you presented at the beginning of your talk. So in 2004, unipolar depressive disorders were the third leading cause of disease burden. By 2030, they're expected to be the leading cause of disease burden globally, and already among women of childbearing age, they're the leading cause of disease burden. Yet the health system response really has been pretty inadequate, particularly in developing countries. If we take the example of Kenya, and here I've included data from the US just as a reference point, the age standardized suicide rate exceeds that of the United States, yet there's about a 40-fold deficit in the number of psychiatrists working in the country. That rate of 0.19 per 100,000 amounts to about 78 psychiatrists in the whole country for a population of 40 million. And you can see that the social worker shortage is even more extreme. So any efforts to reform the mental health care system must begin with an understanding of local systems of care. So what do people do presently to address depression? So the aim of this research is to describe the therapeutic landscape for depression. And by therapeutic landscape, I'm referring to the forms of health provision that exist from the perspective of the populations that use them. And so why would we think that social networks could be a resource for depression? First of all, the traditional social capital literature views social relationships as resources for achieving benefits. Second, in situations of poverty where access to formal services is often limited, social relationships may take on special importance in ensuring access to a variety of social goods. And finally, empirical work suggests that social networks are indeed mobilized to address depression or mental health in general. So to study this issue, I used a mixed methods case study approach in one location in Western Kenya. Most of the data I'll present today comes from a series of three in-depth interviews with 14 women who are suffering from depression identified using the Beck Depression Inventory. My interviews were conducted in Luo by some trained research assistants. The interviews were recorded, transcribed, translated to English, and then I used Atlas TI to code those transcripts. My study site was a village located in Siaya District in Western Kenya. This is Siaya District is here along the border with Uganda. This is the district itself, and my village comes from this corner here of Siaya District. Siaya is home to the Luo, the third largest ethnic group in Kenya. It's one of the poorest districts in Kenya, and standard indicators of health are among the worst in the country. As elsewhere in Kenya, Siaya has a pluralistic health system comprised of a multiplicity of actors engaged in various healing strategies, so kind of a combination of allopathic or biomedical, sort of Western or modern medicine, indigenous or traditional medicine, and also religious and spiritual healing. Okay, so what did I find? First, depression is prevalent in the study site. Of the 63 women who completed the screening, over two-thirds suffered from depression, ranging from mild to severe. Now, this was not a probability sample, so it's difficult to infer the population prevalence, but this estimate is in line with other studies from Kenya. Also, in the qualitative data, there was a sense that depression was nearly ubiquitous and almost inevitable. For example, this participant said that she felt like she had been depressed many times, and she continues, "In a human being, I feel depression must be there. If you don't experience depression, then you are dead." Second, depression has social origins, in particular, interpersonal conflict and poverty were cited over and over as the causes of depression. For example, one participant says, "I'm just depressed on how I can get money to solve my problems. It's just about poverty. It's the one that brings all these problems." At no point during the fieldwork did any participant express a biological or psychological understanding of depression. So as we would expect, given its perceived social etiology, there's a sense that depression is not something that can be treated by the allopathic health system. So, for example, one participant, an herbalist, told me, "You can't receive happiness from the hospital. It can't be treated. They only give you medicine to make you sleep." Indeed, no participant noted the existence of a biomedical treatment option, nor did any of the women reveal that they had availed themselves of one. Of course, there are also supply-side issues here that we should take stock of. All of these issues, poor access to healthcare, medication stockouts, lack of training, these all contribute to a healthcare system that's ailing in general and with respect to mental health care. So turning to other elements of the therapeutic landscape, there was a perception that indigenous healing is really waning. It's not very common these days. Healers are dying out, and the ones that remain are not necessarily trustworthy. Their practices may not be effective, leading people to really avoid them. Religious healing also appears to share the same sort of fringe status in recent times. So, for example, a community health worker told me Jalemo, a faith healer, is just like Ajuoga, a witch doctor. They don't say the truth. Indeed, no participant indicated that they consulted an indigenous or religious healer for depression. Skip that slide for time. So the three most obvious elements of the therapeutic landscape are unequipped to address depression. What of the social networks of participants? So informal social networks, and here I'm talking about those that are made up of family, friends, neighbors, they provide many different types of support that get at those social roots of depression. So including emotional support, people describe feeling encouraged, companionship. They also provide instrumental support, so help with household chores, money, employment opportunities, and informational support. So they described being given advice about health issues or family or marital problems. But despite all that they provide, informal social networks are not considered adequate or ideal in certain cases. So participants noted over and over that the support they receive from their social networks is not always available when it's most needed. For example, even though you are friends, the friendship is not helpful in times of need. Formal social networks may provide sort of an alternative source of support to people. And here, when I say formal, I'm speaking mostly of faith communities and community groups, secular community groups. I'm focusing mainly on secular community groups, though religious communities do account for a large and very important part of the therapeutic landscape. Formal social networks are superior to informal social networks because they're more reliable in times of need. So for example, this quote down here, "If you belong to any group, you can be assured of some help if something happens to you." So what am I speaking of here when I talk of community groups? There are a variety of types of community groups, and membership in groups is nearly ubiquitous. Out of the 14 participants, all but one belonged to at least one community group with a mode of two. And the importance of groups is also evident in how often they're the topic of conversation. Groups meet a variety of material needs through different strategies. Many exist to provide small loans through which women can access capital to use for small business investments. Participants also note receiving emotional support and advice from group members. Though they demonstrate much promise in addressing some of those social roots of depression, there are barriers to participation. So groups require membership fees ranging from 50 shillings, just under a dollar, to 1,000 shillings, about $11 per month. And that can really strain household budgets. One participant explains, on Wednesday when we went to our merry-go-round group, I didn't have money to pay. And even today, I was thinking how to get money that I will pay in our next group meeting. Now what always stresses me is the thought of getting money. Groups themselves may struggle with their liquidity when members can't afford to pay back their loans, for example. So really, individual and group liquidity are key to the proper functioning of these very promising elements of the therapeutic landscape. So the public health implications. First, therapeutic or pharmacological interventions to address depression must be accompanied by efforts to address the social roots of depression, particularly material deprivation. One promising avenue is through investment in these community groups, perhaps through grants granted to the groups to improve their solvency, or micro scholarships given to individuals for help in paying group fees. At the same time, I would be remiss not to call for serious efforts towards strengthening the health system to accommodate depression. But I think more research is needed to understand which health system interventions would bear the most fruit in terms of better mental health care. The research is not without limitations. Most significantly, the research was conducted in Luo, and it's likely that I have missed some of the nuances in the English translations. Further, the generalizability of these findings to other contexts may be limited. The strength of this research is that it relied on multiple contacts with the participants, allowing us to establish rapport, and multiple data sources, allowing for data triangulation. Most importantly, this research represents an effort toward in-depth, grounded work on a significant yet understudied public health issue. I'd like to acknowledge several people for their support and guidance throughout this process. I want to highlight my research assistants, who were very capable and did an amazing job with the fieldwork. And most importantly, I'd like to thank my research participants and dedicate this research to them. Thank you. Okay. Yeah, no, that's a great question. I was worried about that issue, and so I started the fieldwork off by doing focus group discussions, and so we really did a lot of work around sort of fleshing out how to talk about these issues, and I was relieved to find that they do indeed have sort of a category of, depression. And so they speak of it as, the literal translation is, having many thoughts that disturb the heart. And so that question would have been asked with that language. Yeah. Okay, thank you.